For our first psalm today, we're going to sing Psalm 19a. We're going to sing both 19a and 19b. 19a focuses on creation, the creation that God has made, which gives honor and glory to Him and declares His greatness as He is the one who has made such an amazing creation. And 19b is going to focus more on the special word of God that communicates to us. For our scripture reading, let's go to Revelation chapter 8 today. Revelation chapter 8. We'll read through the first four of the seven trumpets. And we'll talk about all these verses today from a perspective of a literal understanding of these first four trumpets. Let's begin with Revelation chapter 8, verse 6. This is what the Lord has said. Revelation 8, 6. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers, upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night there likewise. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. May the Lord bless the reading of His word to our hearts today. So, since the close of the book, or I guess the open of the book, with the last seal being broken at the beginning of chapter 8, we have seen that seven angels were given seven trumpets. We talked about the trumpets, that they are instruments of the priest. So, these angels that blow the seven trumpets are doing a priestly work by blowing them. And the trumpets were used for various purposes, including, as we said, certainly is the case here, that they were to call the people together for battle and be used in the battle to attack the enemy. And this is God's attack against the enemy, which is the world that is opposed to Him and that has hurt His people, the martyrs crying out under the altar of burnt offering. We saw also in that introduction another angel at the altar of incense, the golden altar, which is before the throne and before God, as he does the priestly work of burning the incense on the altar. And with the incense went up the prayers of the saints, which again, I believe, refers to the cries of the martyrs under the altar for an offering for vengeance, calling God to bring vengeance on the world that has hurt them. And the angel then takes the fire from the altar and throws it upon the earth, and there is noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake, as it says in verse 5. So then we come to the seven angels that prepare to sound their trumpets in verse 6, And we spent the time last week to explain why these should be taken in a literal way, based on other prophecies, as well as the example of the 10 plagues, which we all agree were literal and not to be taken in some allegorical or figurative way. And so likewise that these trumpets also should be taken in a literal way. But I thought I'd start off this sermon just looking at some of the samples of how others take it besides in a literal way, generally an allegorical way, and even some in a literal way, but maybe more rationalizing than explaining what the passage actually says. So in this regard, I just took a few samples. I'm not in any way saying that these men define all the views or are great examples of all the views out there of how these trumpets are taken, but just as a sampling of how some interpreters have taken the trumpets. I'll start with Matthew Henry, although what I read this morning was that Matthew Henry didn't actually write the portion of Romans to Revelation in his 6 volumes of his commentary. He died in 1714, I believe, was the year. And then his commentary was finished later by those that had some of his sermon notes, but I'm sure also may have added some of their own opinions in the matter. So either way, this is what's represented in his commentary on the book of Revelation. So he basically understands the first 6 trumpets referring to false doctrines that are present in the world. And he did talk a little bit about the possibilities of identifying some of those false doctrines. When he came to the 3rd and the 5th of the trumpets, which involve the star falling from heaven, he felt that that was some preeminent false teacher that was spreading these false doctrines to the church and bringing all sorts of chaos within the church. So his commentary's understanding is that these are all allegorical things, the trees, the grass, the ships, all these things represent something besides trees, grass, and ships, and basically are communicating that false doctrines are coming into the church and creating problems for the church. John Gill, who is a Baptist, basically a Calvinist Baptist pastor, again in the 1700s, lived beyond Matthew Henry, he communicated similar ideas, went into a little more detail about some of those interpretations, but he understood, for example, in the first trumpet that the earth that the fire, hail, and blood are thrown down to, that the earth represents the Roman Empire. So his view was more specifically that each of the trumpets represent a different period in church history. The earth was the Roman Empire. The fire that was thrown to the earth represented the heresy that would spread throughout the Roman Empire. The trees that are burned up, 1/3 of the trees are burned up in the trumpet. He said these are the elite men. And then the grass, all the grass is burned up, and that is just the common men. That's going to be a problem in interpretation later, because when you get to the 5th trumpet with the locusts that attack the people, it says specifically there that the trees and the green grass weren't touched at all, but it attacked men. And so how do you first say that the trees and the grass represent men, and then later the trees and grass weren't touched, but the locusts specifically attacked the men? So that I think is a problem that his interpretation would have. But nevertheless, that's how he understood the trees and the grass to represent the men that have been burned up or affected by this false doctrines that have that come into the Roman Empire in the early stages of the church. And then the second trumpet, the mountain that comes down, again, trying to identify a certain false doctrine that is coming down into the sea, which the sea again represents the Roman Empire. The fishes and the sea creatures that die represent the men that are dying from the false heresies. The ships that are destroyed represent the towns and the cities affected by these false doctrines within the empire. When he came to the third trumpet with the falling star, he identified that as Pelagius, the false teacher who Augustine argued against, Augustine giving the more reformed view, the view that God is in control of men, and that if man does anything good, it's by the work of God. And he opposed the view of Pelagius that thought that man was able to do good without God, that God gave him the abilities to do good works without God. And so the false star there, or the falling star, is Pelagius. The wormwood, the bitterness of the star, is the false doctrine again. And the rivers and fountains are the provinces and cities that it affected. And as he went into the fifth and the sixth trumpets, he began to speak about the Pope, or maybe Mohammed, as being the star that fell. And so he's trying to identify, he could see either the Roman Church being the source of the false doctrine, or the Muslims on the other side being the source of the false doctrine. So he wasn't trying to nail it down one way or the other. But again, the locusts in the fifth trumpet were either the clergy of the church or the Muslims spreading their teaching. And the smoke was the council and the decrees and the traditions that have hid the sun. And so there was darkness in the land at that time. And so he looks at the different trumpets as different periods throughout the church, trying to identify how false doctrines have crept in that way. When we come to Hendrickson is certainly earlier in the 1900s, mid-1900s, I think, when he gave us his commentary on the Book of Revelation. He has more of the idea of these trumpets are repeated events throughout all of church history. This could be said kind of parallel to how I took four horsemen in this, with the seals being broken. Four horsemen talk about wars, rumors of wars, and famines, and different things related to the beginning of sorrows, as Matthew 24 said. And those are present even now today throughout church history. Well, he understood these trumpets to reflect the same thing. These are the same catastrophes that happen every single generation of the church. And so again, he spiritualizes this understanding. The first two trumpets are just various disasters that affect the church. The third trumpet, the bitterness of the wormwood, is the bitter sorrow that fills the heart of the wicked. The troubles in the sky and the heavens would be the fourth trumpet, and I can't remember specifically how he spiritualized that. The fifth trumpet, the demons are let out. Hell is opened and the demons are let out. And this is something, when we get to the fifth trumpet, I want to focus on, as I think a very wrong view of hell. Hell is the place of the judgment of the spirits, not the place where they're all hanging out as the headquarters being hell that they are going to attack the church from. And I think it's a very wrong view of where the devil is even now, and the place of hell as being the place of torment. Nevertheless, that's what he expresses as the locusts come out and they're supposed to be demons attacking the world. And then he takes sixth trumpet with the horses that kill a third of mankind as the weapons of war that are used throughout this time in the church as well. Again, even more modern would be John Corson's. I just looked at his study Bible, as well as a last example to look at. He's more in the Calvary Chapel, non-denominational churches. And he takes the first four trumpets as the effects of a nuclear blast. So very much a scientific, modern, effects of war type of approach to these trumpets, where, you know, the rivers being bitter and the grass being burned up and all these events are related to a nuclear war that happens. And he would say also that the fifth trumpet with the locusts represents a demonic battle, the demons coming out. And then the sixth trumpet, again, just like Hendrickson, he would say that that is weapons of war. And so we'll talk about those different ideas when we get to the fifth and sixth trumpets. But today I wanted to give a different perspective, taking more of the literal approach when we come to the first four trumpets. And then we'll also speak about the proclamation by the angel at the end of chapter 8, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth. So we read about the first trumpet in verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. Again, we remember that a third is what's repeated throughout the trumpets, and so significant for the seven trumpets as a whole. So the hail, fire, and blood come down to the earth. Hail, we're going to see later in the last bowl, the last of the plagues, such hail that has never been on the earth before. Such great devastation the hail in particular causes on that occasion, but that's also the occasion of the second coming. So here we are in the trumpets at the beginning of the tribulation. The hail that comes later, which is so great and devastating, that's particularly later with the seventh bowl at the second coming of Christ in the Battle of Armageddon. It reminds us also of the literal hail that came down in Egypt during the 10 plagues. Hail that was able to break the trees. They were so great. Such great hail that was never seen in that part of the land before, as it says in the words of Exodus. And that came down with thunder and lightning that killed both the men and the beasts that were in the field. If you recall, God gave them an opportunity to be saved from that plague, and told them it was going to happen, and whoever feared God kept his servants and the livestock inside. But those of the Egyptians that didn't took them out into the field, and they died. That plague of the hail destroyed the trees, again, being both just regular green trees as well as the fruit trees like fig trees, and it destroyed the plants. Some of the plants were able to remain until the time of the locust plague that came next. But nevertheless, great devastation to both man and beast and to the agriculture of the land of Egypt in that plague. But this hail in this trumpet comes down not only with hail, but fire. Fire. Fire, again, is going to be seen in the fourth bowl later. The angel is, there's an angel that pours out the fourth bowl, and he's given power over fire to scorch men. So a very deadly and scary plague yet to come. But this fire that comes, it's not the same as lightning. I think when we come to different passages of the Bible where fire comes down out of heaven, we in our more modern time want to say that that must be lightning. But if we go back to verse 5, I think that this verse simply makes a distinction between both fire and lightning when it says in verse 5, and the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it into the earth, and there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. And so there is a distinction between fire and lightning, and what is rained down is not lightning, but fire from heaven that burns up that which it falls upon. The result of this, according to the passage, says that a third of the trees are burned up, and also all the green grass. So the result focuses especially, primarily, upon the effects of the fire. But we can imagine, just like with Egypt, the effect of the hail would cause much damage as well. The effect of the fire would be the burning of the trees and the green grass. So the trees we can think of as a source of food, as we've talked about, source of the wood, a cause for other fires. Trees fall, burning, and fall into houses, which would cause other fires. And of course, fire being poured out of heaven would affect the burning of different buildings, different structures, and more often than not, death somewhere along the lines as it affected people that were in those structures. And so though one commentator indicated that the first four trumpets focus on the world itself, the different aspects of the world, the earth, the sea, the rivers, and then the sun, moon, and stars, really, and then later, the fifth and the sixth and the seventh would affect the inhabitants of the earth, really, we see that men are dying and being affected even in these first four trumpets. So I don't think that that is can be strictly held, even as we see even in these first four trumpets, men are dying. But I guess I also want to think about the aspect of blood falling from heaven. It's mixed with blood. I don't want to be too graphic or traumatic, but at the same time, we can all imagine what kind of mental anguish people are going through at this time, as blood is being basically rained down upon the world. And not only is there the horror of fire and hail, but the morbidity, the disgust that is widely being felt. As a chaplain, of course, I deal with mental health concerns and PTSD, traumatic experiences that people just can't get over because of how they've been horrified by what they've seen or experienced in life, sometimes as a result of war. But there are so many other horrifying events, like being mugged or something like that, that people just can't get out of their minds and are progressively worn down by. Can you imagine what kind of mental health problems will arise, such a widespread scare and horror that such an event would happen again, such widespread terror of even walking out of your house, such widespread PTSD of seeing such gross and morbid scenes outside of your window, if you were one of the ones that were mercifully in your house and safe in a protected area at that time. So the fact that blood would fall from heaven is itself an amazing thing. And of course, to take this literally, we must not believe that this is in any way from a body that the blood arises. Just like the river of Egypt turning to blood, it wasn't from a body that it happened, but it must be the creative work of God to do so. So that blood would come down out of the heavens is itself an expression of the horror and significantly felt by the people through this trumpet. Then to the second trumpet. The second trumpet is given in verse 8, and the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea that had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. So the second trumpet is a mountain falling out of the sky, fiery mountain, or something like a fiery mountain. John is seeing a vision, and he sometimes has to explain what he sees, guided by the Spirit of God, but using things that he has seen in the normal life. And so he says it's like a mountain. It's like a mountain. Presumably, it's like a mountain in that it's a huge rock, very large rock, like a mountain is very large, and that maybe it's particularly in a cone shape, like we would picture a mountain to be, possibly. The fiery mountain, we can easily rationalize that as coming through the atmosphere and being on fire because of the friction as it enters Earth's atmosphere. Maybe it's a meteor, as again, we can easily rationalize in our scientific understanding of space and what's flying around through space. But if so, God had to perfectly time this so that this meteor, this large rock floating through space, comes at the right time when this trumpet is blown, which is certainly not impossible with God, but certainly not impossible for God just to create such a mountain either, as we take the more literal understanding of this great trumpet. And this great mountain falling into the sea does something certainly supernatural. Just throwing a rock in the water doesn't make the water turn to blood. It is the power of God alone that can change water into blood. And a third of the sea is turned into blood. This seems to be a favorite plague, one could say. We, of course, know it happened in Egypt with the river being turned to blood, the first plague of Egypt. It was spread across all the waters of the land and even into the buckets. The water became blood, and the fish of the sea, fish of the river, died as a result, and the river stank as a result. And so a very difficult, uncomfortable plague that affected Egypt. This one falls into the sea. The sea is opposite of what we're going to see with the third trumpet, which is that it falls into the rivers and the streams. So we can assume that the sea represents salt water, and the rivers and streams represent fresh water. And we'll again see that later with the bowls. In the bowls, the whole sea is turned to blood. The second bowl, the whole sea is turned to blood, and all the creatures die. And in the third bowl, the rivers and the streams turn to blood as well. And when that happens, the angel of the rivers speaks and says that God is perfect in his judgment as he gives those that have shed blood, he has given them blood to drink. And so very clearly with the bowl passage, we see that the rivers and stream represent the fresh water that men would drink. They are given blood by God to drink. We also see the water turning to blood with the two witnesses and how they're able to change the water into blood, just like Moses did. So again, this seems to be a common plague at this time and one that God uses. To the opposite, to the contrary, just happened to read this morning in Revelation 21 of the water of life and how God gives that freely to us who are his people. What a great joy it is to be a Christian as he gives blood to his enemies to drink, and as he gives us the waters of life freely in the world to come. But certainly, the third of the sea being transformed into blood, third of the sea creatures dying, and also as a result, the third of the ships are destroyed. With the ships being destroyed, Of course, men would also be destroyed. Direct attack against those sailors that are on the ships, passengers on the ships. So again, this is not just dealing with the environment. This is God bringing judgment on men directly as well. I assume that the ships are destroyed by the mountain itself as it comes into the sea, but it doesn't clearly say that to be the case. Nevertheless, again, a great plague. Presumably, like Egypt's plague of blood, the blood would eventually be washed away by fresh water again, and people would be able not to see the blood eventually. But what a great time of devastation that this plague would bring on the world. Now, in the midst of these trumpets as well, we have to think about how worldwide is this? Is he looking at the globe with the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean and all the other oceans, including the Mediterranean Sea and the waters of the Holy Land, and a third of all that water is turned to blood? Or is he looking more localized, more specific at the land of Israel and the sea, the Great Sea, which is right next to it, being the Mediterranean, that he's seeing that as three parts and one third of that sea is turned to blood? It's not too clear in the passage. There are those that might argue for more localized understanding, and some would see more a worldwide view. When I come to Revelation 21 with the new heavens and new earth, it says that there is no more sea. And as I'll explain when I get there, I don't think that means there's no more oceans and no more seas at all. But from a more localized point of view, and especially referring back to Ezekiel chapter 47 and 48, where the Great Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, is in view, as well as the Salt Sea that's made alive again, the Dead Sea made alive again by the waters of life, that my thought is that it's more focused on the Sea of Galilee, which brings the waters down into the Dead Sea, that no longer is the source of the river, but it's rather the throne of Christ at that time and the new heavens and new earth that brings forth the river of life and eventually flows into the Dead Sea. So my understanding of that sea is not that there's no more water anywhere on the earth, but rather it's more just the Sea of Galilee that he's referring to, which would be a body of water that they would think about when they talk about a sea in that area. But again, that's my understanding. Others have different understandings of that passage. But that would kind of give an example of a more localized view of what sea would mean. So, as I view these trumpets, though, I do generally see a more worldwide view that this would affect a huge part of the earth at this time and cause many nations to be affected by a third of the waters being turned to blood. Whether I'm right or wrong, God alone knows. So let's look at the third trumpet in verse 10. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. So again, we have a situation, it's called a star that falls from heaven. As we look at meteors coming through the atmosphere, some have called them shooting stars, and have, from our vantage point, they seem like they are stars, like the sun, from our scientific point of view as far as what's out there in space. So certainly, again, possibly the idea of a meteor is present. This star could be a new creation by God as well, as he brings this attack upon the world. It's specifically called Wormwood. Wormwood, we commonly think of as a plant. The oils of wormwood and the plant itself are used for various medicinal purposes, but they also have a chemical in it that can be poisonous to men and can make them very sick. I'm not sure that it's able to actually kill somebody, but maybe in strong enough quantities it could. So that is how we know wormwood to be. But this star is specially called by God wormwood. And it affects the fresh water, the springs and the rivers of water. How it affects a third of the waterways is itself a question. Does it break up and just scatter throughout the land and shower down on certain waterways? It doesn't explain. It doesn't explain. Does it just plant in the ground and seep throughout the whole land as it sits there in the ground that it affects the waterways? Again, it doesn't explain. But it does happen. We must believe that it does truly happen, that the rivers and the streams are affected. This results in a third of the fresh water becoming bitter, and again, men actually die as a result of this water that is made bitter. And so a great plague directly against men. And the last one we see in verse 12, the last one as in the fourth trumpet in verse 12, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. So essentially this, which strikes the sun, moon, and stars, affects darkness in the land. Just like in the ninth plague in Egypt, there was darkness, and later we're going to see with the fifth bowl that's poured out upon the throne of the Antichrist, darkness is particularly cast out over the land of his empire. Just like with the plagues of Egypt, there was darkness over the land of Egypt, but not over the land of Israel, the Goshen area, where the Israelites were. God makes a distinction. We cannot just simply explain the plague of Egypt as if it's a solar eclipse, because otherwise, why would the land of Israel or the Goshen area still have light when Egypt had darkness? The power of God has to explain the supernatural event, not just a natural event in nature itself, in science. And even this trumpet that a third of the sun, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars would be affected itself seems to defy our understanding of science and nature. The sun is a big gaseous cloud that's continual explosions. But if he strikes the sun, what does that mean? That just a third of it, a third of the gaseous cloud is removed. How does that truly take away a third of the light? The moon, of course, we know to be a big rock up in space, which reflects the light of the sun. What does it mean that a third of the moon is going to be struck? Is the third of the moon just removed and destroyed? Whatever is the true explanation of the great power of God truly does push our reasoning of science, but not our faith. Our faith knows that God is well beyond the science that we can study and observe. And we must believe that what God says, he is able to do and will do. So again, a third of the day in the third of the night being darkened. Again, if we're talking about the sun, moon, and stars, certainly we're talking about the effects around the whole world, not just the localized area to consider. And so, will this plague then remain? We speak of it as it is at the beginning of the 7 years of tribulation. Will this be an ongoing effect throughout the rest of the tribulation, that always there will be a third of the day and a third of the night darkened? And will this even be eternally? Eventually, we get in the book of Revelation where Christ is our light in the New Jerusalem. Will the sun, even though it's up there, still only shine two-thirds of the day, while Christ gives us light throughout the whole time? These things aren't explained in the passage, but things that we might wonder about. Either way, we definitely see that God is showing his great power, his creative power, his destructive power, his power to judge and punish those who are opposed to him in a particular way. That is the God that we serve, and we can rejoice in his great power to do so. But then we come to verse 13, and this is where we'll end, verse 13. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound. As we consider this angel flying through the midst of heaven, we have to wonder, is this just in the vision that John sees, that this angel is flying, and is he only able to hear this because he's the prophet receiving the message, and we only have it in the Word of God? Or will there literally be an angel flying and people hearing the voice of an angel during this tribulation time? Well, let's look at chapter 14, Revelation chapter 14, and we see three angels that do essentially the same thing in chapter 14, verse 6 through 11. It may at least raise the question and the validity of the fact that maybe people will actually hear angels. And of course, we know that people do hear angels. We have the Word of God that tells us several times that Gabriel, for example, came and spoke to people, an audible message that they actually heard. Will people hear angels during this tribulation time? We might also remember that from the throne came voices or sounds, voices and thunderings and lightnings. So maybe these are part of the voices that are heard throughout the world in this time. Chapter 14, verse 6 says, and I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, just like we saw back in chapter 8, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people. So his message is meant for the people of the world. And he says in verse 7, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image, and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. And so these three angels follow one another, proclaiming very loudly with messages that are meant for the world's inhabitants to hear, are they just supposed to hear as they pick up their Bibles and read and understand it that way? Or will there actually be voices that come from the heavens giving forth proclamations that everyone will hear and will understand, even though they will not heed them as they ought to? Certainly an interesting thing to think about. So as we go back to Revelation 8:13, maybe this is an audible voice, even as at the baptism of Christ, God spoke, saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." Verse 13, the message is, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpets of the three angels which are yet to sound." First, let's focus on, as far as the message is concerned, the inhabitants of the earth. What does it mean, the inhabitants of the earth? If we go back to Revelation 3:10, just you see how some of the passages reflect upon the inhabitants of the earth. Back in 3:10, it says, "Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world, to try them that dwell upon the earth." Those that dwell upon the earth is the same expression in the Greek. And these are those that experience the great tribulation, the time of the tribulation and the hardships that we're talking about now in the trumpet experience. Then we can look also at chapter 6, verse 10, where it says, "And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" Here the martyrs are crying out, and they're referring to those that dwell on the earth as the wicked ones who have killed them and martyred them. If we go to chapter 11, verse 10, it says, "And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry, and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwell on the earth." And so the expression, "those that dwell on the earth," very clearly referred to the wicked who were tortured by the two witnesses throughout that period. And just one more passage, jump to chapter 17, verse 2, where it says, "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth," again our expression there, "the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of fornication." So we're speaking about Babylon here, and how the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk by the wine that she offered. And then verse 8, "The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth," again our expression there, "they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." So when we read in chapter 8, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth," we again, thankfully, rejoice in the mercy of God, that though we inhabit the earth ourselves, He makes a distinction among those that are punished with these woes. The wicked that refuse to acknowledge Him, and the righteous that believe in Him. And even the next trumpet with the locusts makes that distinction very clearly, as the locusts torment the world, verse 4, "And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men that have not the seal of God in their forehead." So the locusts will not eat trees and green things like the normal locusts would, but they attack men, but not just any man, Those that have the seal of God, 144,000, are protected at that time. So this is a great indication that we are talking about the tribulation time when the 144,000 are sealed, and it's the first 3.5 years before they're taken up in the middle of the 7 years of tribulation. So that helps us identify the time period very clearly. But there is a distinction made between the wicked who reject God and the righteous who are sealed in his protection. And then we can jump down to verse 20 where it says, after the fifth and the sixth trumpet are finished, it says, and the rest of men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk, neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their theft. And so very clearly, those inhabitants of the earth that are supposed to take caution from these woes, these are the wicked that have rejected God and living lives in rebellion against him. But then finally, let's think about the aspect of it being woe, woe, woe. Three trumpets remain, three woes are stated. And we see that that is very particular in its language. As we go down to chapter 9, verse 12, after the next trumpet blows, it says, one woe is past, and behold, there are two woes more hereafter. And then if we go to chapter 11, after the two witnesses are talked about, it says in chapter 11, verse 14, the second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. And then in 15, finally, the seventh angel sounded, and there was great voices in heaven, and so forth. And so, with these three woes, first off, we can say that explains why these last three, particularly the next one, the fifth one, doesn't necessarily mention a one-third like the first four trumpets did, because each of the last three are one-third of these particular trumpets that are especially grievous. They're very heavy as it progressively gets worse. So these three woes represent an increase in the degree of severity of these judgments. The locusts come and they torture the people, so much so that they want to die, but they're not able to. And then these horsemen come, and they actually kill one-third of the world's population. An amazing amount of very large number of people die as a result of the sixth trumpet. And of course, the seventh trumpet is a proclamation of the kingdom, which is the day of Christ. The great earthquake, sun, moon, and stars being darkened, the cities falling, the great hail comes down that people cry out in pain from and die from. This is a great devastation in the final trumpet that comes with the proclamation that the kingdoms of this world are now the kingdoms of Christ. And so this shows us the degree of the trumpets increasing, but it also gives us a sense of time as well. Particularly the next trumpet, the fifth trumpet, is going to say that the locust lasts for 5 months. And with the fifth trumpet, we also again see that it's during the time of the 144,000, so we put it in the first half of the tribulation. But one woe has to pass before the next one starts. And so this is not like the four horsemen that I explained, that we're going through all four horsemen now, and it's all happening at the same time, and this is the beginning of sorrows. But these three last trumpets show us that a trumpet's blown, something happened, there's maybe a time period between, and then the next trumpet blows, and then the next trumpet blows, and then we get to these last three, and one woe is past, And then the next one comes. It's like the 10 plagues of Egypt. As one is given, there's a time period, and then the next one comes, and so forth. Again, the first six are going to happen in the first half of the tribulation. And then the final one is at the end of the tribulation, at the second coming. So with these woes, there is more fear that the people should have of the judgment that God is bringing against the wicked. But again, as we said, the mercy of God is towards us for Christ's sake. And what great joy we have because of Him and our relationship with Him.